All right, let's unpack this. Today on the Deep Dive, we're zeroing in on a pivotal Texas Supreme Court case in Re Occidental General Tire. Now, for you law students out there, especially if you're wrestling with civil procedure or thinking about litigation down the line, this case is gold.
Mm-hmm.
It cracks open how courts balance the need for evidence in lawsuits with the crucial protection of trade secrets. Think about any case where a company's proprietary info is sought in discovery, like in products liability. This case sets some, you know, really important ground rules.
Absolutely. This decision from 1998 offers a fascinating look at this very tension. Businesses have a legitimate need to protect their valuable secrets, their formulas, their processes. It's what gives them a competitive edge.
Right.
But at the same time, the legal system needs to ensure fairness, that plaintiffs have access to the information they need to make their case. We've got a rich set of sources for this deep dive, from case briefs to analyses, all to help you understand the core of this decision and why it still matters today.
Okay, so our mission is clear. By the end of this, you should have a solid grasp of the key principles in Continental General Tire and what they mean for how you'll approach discovery disputes involving trade secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Let's set the stage. What was the actual situation that led to this legal battle?
It began with a tragic accident.
Yeah.
Kenneth Fisher was driving a truck when a tire failed catastrophically. He lost control, and in the resulting collision, Dora Pratt and her passenger were fatally injured.
Oh, wow.
The heirs of Dora Pratt subsequently sued Continental General Tire, the tire's manufacturer. Their central argument was that a defect in the tire's belt skim stock was to blame.
Belt skim stock?
Yeah.
It sounds like a very specific component. For those of us who aren't tire engineers, what exactly were the plaintiffs claiming was wrong with it? Think of it like a specific ingredient in their tire recipe, right?
That's a helpful analogy, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The plaintiff's theory was that there was some inherent flaw, either in the chemical makeup or, you know, in how it's manufactured, of this belt skim stock. It's a layer within the tire structure. To prove this defect and connect it to the blowout, they demanded access to the precise chemical formula of the belt skim stock used in that particular tire.
Right. They wanted to see the exact recipe to try and pinpoint a potential bad ingredient. But I'm guessing Continental wasn't exactly eager to hand over their secret sauce.
Precisely. Not at
all.
Continental immediately invoked Texas Rule of Evidence 507. This rule is specifically designed to shield trade secrets from being revealed during the discovery phase of a lawsuit.
Makes sense.
Their reasoning was straightforward. This chemical formula was confidential, it was proprietary, it gave them a significant advantage over their competitors, and thus it absolutely qualified as a trade secret that should not be subject to forced disclosure.
So the plaintiffs are digging for the formula, and Continental is firmly saying, not a chance, it's our trade secret. What happened when this went before the trial court? Who got the initial win?
Initially, the trial court leaned in favor of the plaintiffs, though with a significant condition. They ordered Continental to disclose the chemical formula, but, and this is key, it would be under a strict protective order.
Ah, okay.
This meant that only the plaintiff's lawyers and their designated experts would be allowed to view the information, and they would be bound by restrictions preventing any further dissemination.
A protective order? That sounds like a reasonable middle ground, right? Why didn't Continental just accept that and, you know, move on?
Well, Continental felt that even with the safeguards of a protective order, the risk of their highly valuable trade secret being exposed, even indirectly, was simply too great.
Mm.
They believed the trial court had fundamentally overstepped its authority and abused its discretion by ordering the disclosure in the first place. This highlights just how seriously companies take protecting their trade secrets, even under court-imposed limitations.
Yeah, clearly.
So they took a rather extraordinary step. They sought what's known as mandamus relief from the Texas Supreme Court.
Mandamus relief. Yeah, that's not your everyday legal maneuver. For those of us still learning the ropes, what exactly is that and why did Continental feel it was necessary here?
Mandamus is essentially an order issued by a higher court commanding a lower court to perform a specific act or, more relevant here, to correct a clear and egregious abuse of its discretionary power when there isn't another adequate legal remedy available through the standard appeals process.
Okay, like a direct correction.
Exactly. Continental argued that the trial court's order to hand over their trade secret was such a clear abuse of discretion that immediate intervention by the Supreme Court was absolutely essential. It's a way for a higher court to step in and say, no, the lower court got this fundamentally wrong.
Okay, so the stakes were clearly high if Continental felt mandamus was the only way to go. Now the Texas Supreme Court is involved. To really understand their decision, we need to dissect this Texas Rule of Evidence 507. What are the crucial details of what it says about trade secrets in the context of discovery?
Rule 507 is absolutely central to this whole case. It defines a trade secret quite broadly as, you know, any confidential data or information that gives a business an advantage over competitors who don't have access to it or don't use it.
Right. Broad definition.
Yeah, it can encompass a wide range of things, a formula, a manufacturing process, a design, a customer list, really anything proprietary that holds economic value. But the most critical aspect of the rule, for our purposes, is the specific burden-shifting framework it establishes. When one party in a lawsuit seeks to discover information that the other party claims is a trade secret.
Burden-shifting, we see this pop up in so many areas of law. How exactly does it operate under Rule 507 in this kind of situation?
It's a very structured two-step process. First, the party that wants to keep the information confidential in this case, Continental, has the initial responsibility of the burden to come forward and present evidence demonstrating that the information they're trying to protect actually is a trade secret.
Okay, step one, prove it's a secret.
Correct. Now, what's interesting in the Continental case is that the plaintiffs actually conceded early on that the Bell Skim Stock formula did indeed qualify as a trade secret. So Continental cleared this first hurdle without much of a challenge.
All right, so it's established that it's a trade secret. What happens next? Where does the responsibility, the burden, shift to?
Once the information is established or conceded to be a trade secret, the burden then shifts squarely to the party that is requesting the information, in this case, the plaintiffs.
Okay, so now it's on the plaintiffs.
Right. To overcome the protection of the trade secret privilege, they have to demonstrate two key things to the court. First, they must show that the information is absolutely necessary for a fair adjudication of their case, meaning they can't properly prove their claims without it.
Necessary. Got it.
And second, they have to demonstrate that the information is not available to them from any other reasonable source.
Necessary and not available elsewhere, those sound like pretty significant hurdles for the requesting party to overcome. And after they make their case, the court still has a role to play in weighing everything, right?
Precisely. Even if the plaintiffs manage to demonstrate both necessity and a lack of alternative sources, Rule 507 mandates that the trial court must then engage in a crucial balancing test.
Okay, the balancing act.
The court has to carefully weigh the plaintiff's demonstrated need for the information to fairly present their case against the potential harm that disclosure could inflict on Continental. This potential harm could include damage to their competitive standing, loss of market share, or, you know, other negative economic consequences.
Okay, so let's circle back to the Continental decision itself. Why did the Texas Supreme Court ultimately side with the tire company and against the plaintiff's request for the formula? What specific failures in the plaintiff's arguments led to that outcome?
This is where the specifics of the plaintiff's arguments, or rather the lack thereof, became critical. Their primary justification for needing the chemical formula was their belief that sulfur found on the tire's belt was a contaminant introduced during the manufacturing process.
Ah, the sulfur theory.
And they needed the exact formula to confirm this and link it to a defect. However, the Supreme Court found a really significant gap in the evidence they presented to support the necessity of having that specific chemical formula.
So they had a theory about the sulfur, but they didn't effectively explain why knowing the exact formula was the only way to prove that theory or the defect. Is that it?
Exactly. That's the core of it. On the other side, Continental's expert witness provided testimony arguing that the key to determining whether the tire was defective lay in its physical properties, things like its strength, its elasticity, how it behaved under stress.
Right.
Their expert contended that you could analyze these physical characteristics and identify potential defects without needing to know the precise chemical formula of the belt skim stock.
That makes intuitive sense. You can test the performance and integrity of the tire itself without necessarily knowing the exact molecular makeup of every single component.
And that was a major point that resonated with the Supreme Court. The plaintiffs failed to provide any persuasive expert testimony that explained why the specific chemical formula was absolutely indispensable to proving their claim of a defect. They didn't offer any data or analysis showing that examining the physical properties of the tire would be insufficient.
So no expert saying we have to have this formula because...
Correct. And critically, they also failed to present any comparative chemical formulas from other tire manufacturers to illustrate why Continental's particular composition was crucial to their argument about the presence or impact of the sulfur as a contaminant.
So the absence of that comparative data really weakened their argument for needing continental-specific trade secret, made it seem less unique or essential.
Absolutely. Without demonstrating how Continental's formula differed in some significant way from others, or why that specific difference was key to the alleged defect caused by the sulfur, their argument for needing the exact formula simply didn't hold up under the rigorous necessity standard of Rule 507.
Yeah, that necessary word really carries weight here.
It really does. As a direct result, the Texas Supreme Court concluded that the trial court had indeed abused its discretion by ordering Continental to disclose this trade secret when the plaintiffs had not met their burden of proving its necessity.
And the ultimate outcome was that the Supreme Court granted Continental's request for mandamus relief, effectively blocking the disclosure order.
Yes, they conditionally granted the writ of mandamus. This directed the trial court to vacate its previous order compelling Continental to produce the belt-skim stock formula. It was a clear victory for the protection of trade secrets in this particular legal context.
So for all our listeners who are future lawyers, what are the really crucial lessons to take away from Henry Continental General Tire? What are the key principles you should remember?
There are several really important principles that emerge from this case. First and foremost, it powerfully underscores the robust protection that Texas law affords to legitimate trade secrets. It's not enough to simply assert that something is a secret. A company needs to be prepared to demonstrate its proprietary nature and its genuine economic value.
Okay, strong protection.
But equally critical is understanding the significant burden of proof that the law places on the party seeking to overcome that trade secret privilege during discovery. The term necessity isn't just legal jargon. It represents a high evidentiary standard.
Right.
You must be prepared to convince the court, often through compelling evidence and expert testimony, precisely why that specific trade secret is absolutely indispensable to proving your case and why you cannot reasonably obtain the information you need from any other available source.
Right. Indispensable, not just something that would be helpful or even highly relevant. That's a really important distinction to keep in mind.
Exactly. It's a crucial distinction. And it's also important to remember, as the Supreme Court pointed out in its decision, that their ruling didn't completely and permanently shut the door on the plaintiffs potentially obtaining the formula in the future.
Oh, interesting. So it wasn't a forever no.
Not necessarily. If they could later come back to the court with the necessary evidence and robust expert support to convincingly demonstrate that the specific chemical formula was indeed essential to proving their defect claim, and that this information was not reasonably available elsewhere, they could potentially re-request its disclosure.
That really highlights the strategic and ongoing nature of discovery disputes, especially when proprietary information is involved. Both sides have to be incredibly strategic about the evidence they gather and how they present their arguments to the court. It's not a one-shot deal sometimes.
Absolutely. For those seeking disclosure, the key is to build a very strong evidentiary record that clearly demonstrates necessity and the lack of alternative sources. You can't just make conclusory statements.
Yeah, you need proof.
For those trying to protect their trade secrets, the focus needs to be on clearly establishing the trade secret status and persuasively highlighting the availability of other avenues for the requesting party to obtain the information they need. You know, pointing out, hey, you can test the physical properties. This case really provides a clear and instructive roadmap for how Texas courts will approach this delicate balancing act between the need for evidence and the protection of valuable trade secrets.
All right, so just to summarize the core takeaways from Henry Continental General Tire, we have the clear burden-shifting framework established by Texas Rule of Evidence 507.
Step one, step two.
The very high bar of demonstrating true and compelling necessity when you're attempting to access a trade secret during discovery.
Indispensable, not just helpful.
And the fundamental role of the court in carefully weighing the requesting party's need for the information against the potential harm to the disclosing party. That balancing test.
Precisely. This case stands as a potent reminder that while our legal system strives for fairness and requires access to relevant information, it also firmly recognizes and protects the legitimate economic value inherent in trade secrets.
Right.
It compels litigants on both sides to engage in critical thinking about precisely what information is truly essential and to construct well-supported arguments to either compel or resist its disclosure.
So, as you continue your legal education and prepare for your future careers, really consider how the principles we've explored today might manifest in various other areas of law. Think about intellectual property disputes, complex contract litigation, even environmental law cases where proprietary technologies or processes might become relevant in discovery.
Absolutely, the applications are broad.
How do you anticipate these evidentiary burdens playing out in those different legal contexts? It's all about understanding that crucial and often delicate balance between the fundamental need for evidence to ensure justice and the equally important protection of valuable intellectual property. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.